Hi, folks. It's Larry and Colonel Jeff, too. And we cannot make a new show tonight. That's happened sometimes, as you know. We're going to play, well, one of our favorite older ones. And I just wanted to let you know that. And I hope you like it. And we'll see you next week. Bye.
And now, live from Level 5 Productions on the island of Milleronia, it's the Larry Miller Show. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, and everyone who knows what Easter eggs are. Hi, folks, and welcome back to the Larry Miller Show. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And I'm so impressed, well, I'm always impressed, but by impressionable things. And that's, in the main today, it's how beautiful it is today on Milleronia. I know it's a beautiful place. Well, I built it. But you know what? Even for where we are on the Earth, and the only thing I'll say is it's somewhere in the Pacific. But you know what? Even for where we are, it's always gorgeous here. And sometimes, as you know, in life, in all the things in your lives, too, and my life, it's important, it's wonderful to step back every so often and say, by golly, isn't it gorgeous today? Wasn't it a good day so far? Aren't I happy today? It's very important to do that because also it's being written down. So you're going to get a gold star for that someday. And maybe on that day, maybe you can use one. So in any case, it's gorgeous here today. And that theme always makes me smile. Of course, that's the Rodney Wallace Orchestra and the Jenny Walenda Dancers featuring boy tenor Les Fox asking the musical question, we know what the speed of light is, but what is the speed of dark? Well, Les, I'll tell you, and by the way, as Colonel Jeff Fox mentioned, they're not a relation, but Les, I have to tell you, that's a heck of a question. Good question. We know what the speed of light is, but what is the speed of dark? And of course, we know what the speed of light is. And for my world, for my head, for my brain, for my soul, it suffices just to say it's very fast. I don't know, even when I was taking physics classes in high school or college, and I never knew. And we had them explained. I had some good professors, and they could explain things really, really well. But it was the kind of explanation where 2 or 3 seconds after it ends, you say to yourself, okay, what did he say? What did that mean? What am I listening to? But we know what the speed of light is, yes. What is the speed of dark? And if the speed of light is very fast, we might say the speed of dark is very slow. In fact, we might say it kind of just sits there. And why shouldn't it? Because that's the time, remember, the speed of dark, whether you're outside and it's a dark night, or you're looking at all the stars, and they certainly provide light. But no matter what it is, dark doesn't need any speed. To me, we can be fast in it. It's funny, there's a great old thought. Satchel Paige once said about James Cool Papa Bell, he was so fast, he could turn out the bedroom lights and make it into bed before the room got dark. Now, that's pretty fast. You can turn out the light switch at the door and make it into bed before the room gets dark. Said by Satchel Paige about James Cool Papa Bell. And I wanted to say those names again because they, well, great baseball players, but from the old days. But those are pretty good names. You have to admit, I mean, for goodness sake, I would be happy to give them credit for almost anything. Really? Well, who figured out the speed of light? I believe it was Satchel Paige and James Cool Papa Bell. And that was before he was well known enough to be Cool Papa. He was just called James Papa Bell. And then he got the cool part a few years later. But that's pretty good to say that about. By the way, it's worth mentioning the great Abbott and Costello again, because Colonel Jeff found a credit to one of their scenes in their TV show, and where they do that same line, and that was about 1945 or 1950 or something like that. And in any case, well, I just love Abbott and Costello, and I always like mentioning them. So in any case, Les, what is the speed of dark? I would have to say zero. I'm going to go with zero. The speed of light is 186,000 miles per second squared. I always wondered why they, even in ninth grade, why they put the squared in there. You know, 186,000 miles per second. Squared, Larry. Oh, it's not fast enough, 186,000 miles per second? It's not fast enough for you? And apparently it wasn't. But you got to square that, and that's very, very fast. And so the speed of dark, Les, thank you for asking, but the speed of dark, I will have to say, is zero. And you know what, folks? It's time to mention also why, well, first of all, I love, and the Colonel and I love just mentioning a lot of fans. As the orchestra leader and as the head of the dancers there, the head dancer. But every so often, there's good meaning to them, too. And today there's meaning to all sorts of things. For instance, Rodney Wallace, we made the orchestra leader, and that's because Rodney sent in a picture of himself, and this is not a selfie. You can't get that camera far enough away to be a selfie on this. He has a tattoo on his inner front arm, looks like his right arm, and it's a tattoo. It's a great-looking tattoo on in script, which is cursive, I guess, the kind of thing that our kids aren't taught much these days. And he had Nominum Quid Geminus tattooed on his arm in script, and it looks like a great tattoo. And, well, first of all, thank you, Rodney. It's worth saying that, and by the way, in case you're new to the show, and we hope lots of you are, Nominum Quid Geminus, that's what I used to ask, and when the show started out, if you're in a hotel bar, or any bar, but a hotel bar when I was on the road after two or three shows, and I was leaving and going home the next day, and I would bring my book down to the hotel bar, and it was just about closing up anyway. It was 10 minutes to one or something like that. And I brought the book down to the bar, and I would always order a double something. At that point, a double whiskey was just terrific. You know, it could be always double scotch or double bourbon, but, double Jameson's is always good, a double Irish whiskey. But the point is, every time I got a drink at 10 to 1, after feeling so good, having done three shows and feeling good about them and thinking, well, I really did my job that I love tonight, and I brought good entertainment to the folks in that room. And if that drink wasn't up to snuff, and by up to snuff, I mean it's a straight drink. It's whiskey. It's a straight drink. Sure, I'd always have a couple of ice cubes in it. Not always, but I like that. With two or three ice cubes, not 10, but two or three. And Jeff, just to give it a little coolness and let it know where it's from. And I would always look, I would want to say something to the bartender. If the drink, I ordered a double. And if the drink, well, didn't look like much, it looked like maybe a shot or a shot and a half of something. You want to say at that night, at that time in the night, you want to say to someone, it's not enough that I've just done my work and I've come back to this hotel and I'm glad to be here and I'm going home tomorrow. That's not enough to get a drink that, well, you can pick up in a glass and feel like you're really holding a drink that a man can be proud of. And you know, I never had anything to say, and I always wanted to say, you call that a double? Because that's what we all want to say. And so when I came to the show here, when we started doing this, I said, we put it out on the air, I said, all right, let's get the Latin of that. Let's get that in Latin. How do you say in Latin, you call that a double? And that's what nominum quid geminis means. So we're going to give you a chance to look at this too, because the Colonel is going to put this on our website. And he had suggested that let's please tell Rodney it's not necessary to get a tattoo, but that, you know, just asking is fine or something like that. But I love that this fella has that in Latin on his arm now. Nominum quid geminis. So thank you, Rodney, and good luck. And you'll see it on our website, well, before long, in fact, shortly. And the reason I brought in Jenny Walenda as the head of the dancers is because I just saw today, I just saw her obituary. And I've mentioned this before, but I love reading obituaries, not because we've lost people, but because even when it's someone you don't know at all, a good obituary is like a good biography. It gives you a look at that life and really brings us all, in a way, a little closer together. You say, how do you like that? I didn't know that about him, and I didn't know that about her. And Jenny Walenda, well, that last name may sound very familiar to you. As a Walenda, she was a Walenda from the Walenda family, and they were very famous for a long time in being, well, it says here, aerialists. They were walking on high wires. In fact, the title of her obituary is Matriarch of Aerialist Family That Saw Tragedy. And these were some tough folks. They were committed to this. Aerialist isn't a word you hear much, but they did for a living in shows and circuses all over the world, and they never used a net. They did high wire work. In fact, they used to form, one of their famous ones was they would have a pyramid of the young men in their troupe on a high wire, and they would make a pyramid, and on top of that pyramid was sitting on a chair was one of the women from the group. And that was almost always Jenny, by the way, Jenny Walenda. And once they had a terrible accident, and Jenny's cousin at that point, another Walenda, had said to her, she insisted on going up and being in the chair that day. And, well, they all fell, and some were hurt very badly. And as you can imagine, falling, well, 250 feet. It's such a long way. That's like a 25-story building. Think of that. A building with 25 floors and falling off onto concrete. And I had always a lot of respect for them and thinking, I didn't know the Walendas, and but every so often you'd see them. I think they were on the Ed Sullivan Show a bunch, and we'd see them as a family. I'd say, how do you like that? Get a load of these folks. What caught my eye also today was, well, we're sorry to see anyone go, but God bless her. She was not a baby. She lived a good long life. She was 87 years old. And it just caught my eye that at the end that over the decades, it says here, the Walendas added to their list of daredevil accomplishments. Well, that's sure true. And by the way, Jenny was born in Sarasota, Florida, but her family then moved back to Germany when she was a kid in 1928, 1929, which, as I told the Colonel, that's a heck of a time to move back to Germany. That's a, good luck now. And Jenny was in a big-time Nazi troupe No, well, it, that sounds like the wrong way to say it. It was a big government Nazi athletic troop. That makes it much better, doesn't it? And she said, she has a quote here that, I had no political feelings. I was simply a superb athlete, a young lady who did as I was told. And that's one of those things you want to say, okay, okay, listen, all righty, whatever you say, and fine. But this was a tough woman, and after they stayed, that whole family stayed in Germany through the whole war. And then when, I think you know how that war went, and then when the Russians came in, she was grabbed and, well, held as a sex prisoner by the Soviets, and then finally escaped after a long time, and then came back to America and joined up with the family. But this was a tough bird, this woman. She was a tough old bird, and I suppose you have to be in those days. But, and for goodness sake, this is what you're doing for a living. And it says here, though, over the decades, the Willendes decided to add to their list of daredevil accomplishments. In 2012, just a couple of years ago, Nick Willenda telephoned his grandmother, Jenny, just after he became the first person to cross Niagara Falls on a tightrope. Now, that's kind of amazing. I don't know a lot about circus performing. Maybe you do, but that's a heck of a thing to do. It says here, she was as proud as any grandmother would be, but didn't think much of the leather halter that held Nick's balancing pole to his chest. As you know, they all have that pole there, that those long poles. And that she said, when asked about it, she said to him that, well, that shoulder strap is full of baloney, she told the Sarasota Herald Tribune. He should have just carried the pole like my father. And that's the last line in the obituary. And I, when I read it over a cup of coffee this morning, that you kind of think, whew, boy, you know, I know it's a tough business you're in, but you know, maybe your grandson, who just was the first human to survive crossing on a tightrope across Niagara Falls, maybe he needed a little more stability in the pole. Because can you imagine, good Lord, the wind, the water spraying, the disbalance, the unbalance you have. Come on. I mean, so you put together sort of a leather shoulder strap to hold the thing to your chest. And you want to say, all right, God bless you. I hope you're well now, and talking to all your other family members who've passed on. But you want to say, that wasn't enough for you? Maybe he needed something to hold the pole. And to say as a reaction, that shoulder strap is full of baloney. He should have just carried the pole like my father. All right, then. All righty, then. I mean, God bless you, and I'm glad I read about you. And you know what? I always say, you know, when I read about someone good in an obituary, I always say, and I mean it, you know what? God bless you, rest in peace, and God bless your family. And you too, Jenny. Good for you in all that you did. And perhaps for one of these days in heaven, you and your grandson at that point can have a chat about that, well, holding the pole that way. And that chat may last a million years. There may be things to talk about. But in any case, I liked reading about Jenny, and good for you. Rest in peace. And by Amazon and PayPal. That's right, Amazon and PayPal. I love these companies. Amazon.com, where, well, I love that knowing and saying that you can get anything you want, except, of course, a real Amazon. That's the one thing you can't get. If you can, Amazon can give you anything you can imagine, anything you've ever thought of. But if what you're thinking of is a tall, gorgeous, astonishing, muscular, well, super heroine, and Amazon, who's just gorgeous and sexual and just very willing. If that's what you're looking for, I don't think Amazon can help you. But if you succeed in that, by the way, please let us know. And if you go into shop at Amazon, now what you do is, don't go to Amazon. And any fool can do that. And you don't want to do that. You don't want to be a jabbernowl, a moonsaki. If you're going to shop at Amazon, what you do is you go to our website first, LarryMillerPodcast.com. LarryMillerPodcast.com. Who's on the mountain? Tom Mix. Oh, he broke a string. That's another of the Colonel's sound effects. Poor thing. And what you do is you go to our website, LarryMillerPodcast.com, and click on the Amazon banner, and we'll take you there. That's right. Doesn't matter what you're doing. We'll get up. Could be the middle of the night. We could be, well, in the middle of a broadcast here on Milleronia, whereas, you know, it takes the Colonel 3 helicopter rides to get here. And we'll take you to Amazon, and then you can buy whatever you like. It doesn't cost you anything extra, and Amazon sends us a little bit of dough, which is my favorite part of Amazon. That's why it's such a great company, by the way, because they do three things in a row. Number one, whatever you want, you can get. That's pretty good. Number two, whatever you ask for, they will immediately send you. That's pretty good, too. And number three, the best of all, is that whatever you order, Amazon sends us a percentage of the cost. And we like that a lot. And we can put that to our next big fancy fried chicken dinner, which will be me and the Colonel. And it always had been, well, with Dr. Chris. And Dr. Chris is well, we love him. He's a great friend and was a great colleague. And he's not here with us on our independent show for several reasons. But the main one is he signed up for Space Camp. And he's still there. And we're communicating by letter, just like your parents and grandparents used to send you when you went to camp. And he's doing very well over at Space Camp. And he's really, they want him to teach some of the courses too. He's doing just fine. I'll tell you more along the way as the weeks and months go by about that. And so thank you, Amazon. And go to LarryMillerPodcast.com and click the Amazon banner. And then you can tell us how much you like it. And then we can eat that fried chicken at our fancy dinner with two cocktails before at a different place. And we'll tell you how our dinner was. And by PayPal. That's right. Still the most fun to say a company with a great name, PayPal. And this always goes without saying, but that's why I say it. If you enjoy the show and you like us here, And you like the Larry Miller Show, and you would like to send us some money to help out, and why wouldn't you? You can do it through PayPal. What that means is, though, what we always say, well, instead of saying donate or pay what you like, I always say buy us some drinks. That's right, buy us some drinks, because what you do is, there are different levels of buying drinks, by the way, level 1 through 5, like from my 5 levels of drinking bit, levels 1 through 5 you can use to send us something, or right up to the top of the heap. We're driving to Florida.
We're driving to Florida.
Oh, that's what it was. Oh, that's a good one. The Colonel and I had talked about that last week a few times now, of getting that as part of the show, that's me from a live comedy show. And boy, you know, let's just find a good cue to set that up. That, yes, levels 1 through 5, all the way up to the top of the heap.
We're driving to Florida.
Well done, Colonel. And they heard that all over Milleronia, by the way. As every time he plays that, boy, hundreds of birds take off from the trees, and people who are normally standing online at our lunch buffet by the poolside, well, those people then look around too, saying, good Lord, what was that? And they should know that every so often I will say levels 1 through 5, and they will then hear,
we're driving to Florida!
Oh, man. Show business is great. So look for the PayPal banner on our website too, LarryMillerPodcast.com. And every little bit helps us keep the old leg lamp lit, and we appreciate it. Thanks to everyone who has contributed already. Oh, and here's something else that the Colonel put in. Signed hardcover copies of my book, Spoiled Rotten America, are now for sale at store.comedyfilmnerds.com. That's store.comedyfilmnerds.com. And every so often I'll spell out an address like that, but definitely when it involves someone buying my book, which I think is a, well, it's a great thing to do, and thank you. And speaking of great things to do, that brings us to our haiku section. Now, we started this wow. Forgive me, by the way. It must have been the fish. Boy. You want to say to that guy, God bless you, you practiced enough. Go climb a tree and start looking at birds. In any case, a haiku is a great kind of poem, and we are encouraging listeners to get on the poetry bandwagon by writing a haiku. That's right. Now, it could be about me or this show, or it could be about you and your show, or it could be about that fella playing whatever that thing is that he was just playing. Or now, what is a haiku? You all know the word. It's a haiku is a short poem that makes a quirky or surprising observation about some fleeting experience, usually an otherwise ordinary or trivial seeming one. Now, often it expresses a sudden insight. Not around here, but you could well do that too. The beauty of them is that they're constant in their structure. They're like a sonnet, if you know, the sonnet form of what Shakespeare wrote. They're so gorgeous. But a haiku has 3 lines. That's it. The first line is 5 syllables. The second line is 7 syllables. And the third line is 5 syllables once more. And boy, I'll tell you that when you write that well, we had a bunch of folks, and thank you. I can't tell you enough. This is part of what we really like about the show. Please write in, and a bunch of folks did, onto our website, and I'm going to read several of them here, and then, well, all of them, you know, every week, but please write them. And here's one to start with. Here's one by Jeffrey Burchell, and here's his haiku. Here, 5 syllables. Here is another 7. Now, we're back to 5. Now, the Colonel thought that was a little on the simple side, but you know what I said, and we both think this, that I said, you know what? It's either simple or brilliant. It's probably both those things. Just saying that, and it's the perfect form. Here, 5 syllables. Here is another 7. Now we're back to 5. Good work, Jeffrey. Yeah, good on you. The next one is by Joel Hawkins. And here's his. Add Wonder Woman, two good drinks, and fried chicken, I am in heaven. Add Wonder Woman, two good drinks, and fried chicken, I am in heaven. Joel, I'll tell you one thing. That thing is so good, it made me stop and blink and get thirsty for two good drinks and fried chicken. I mean, I'm serious. I thought when I read that, wow, Wonder Woman, two good drinks, fried chicken, I'm in heaven, and holy mackerel, I am. Just reading that, I think it sent me where I want to go. I looked at the Colonel, and I thought, can we just do that? Could we just go, if we could get a hold of Wonder Woman, two Wonder Women, or maybe one? Because I'm a big fan of Linda Carter's. I just always had a huge crush on her. And then two good drinks and fried chicken. Good Lord. Well done, Joel. And here's one by Ted Herman. I'm going to pee. I'll be back in a minute. Does anyone care? Well, first of all, Ted, technically no. It's not as if anyone really cares about that. But I think you wrote it beautifully. I'm going to pee. I'll be back in a minute. Does anyone care? I think that's the way life goes. I think that there are so many things in it that at the time, let's be honest, folks, as you know, when it comes to peeing, if you've got to go, you've got to go. There is nothing better than that moment. There's nothing, no happier experience than that when you get to the bathroom and you're there and you close the door and you take things down and you get ready and there you go. Whew. That's a pretty good feeling. And I'm just saying, I'm not making fun of it. I'm saying that's a moment when you can really just stare straight ahead at a wall of tile and just say, well, that feels all right. And here's one by Jody West. My son, a soldier, can you see tears in my eyes? He is my hero. Well, Jody, I thought that was beautiful. And I just want to read it again, because my son is a Marine, one of my kids, and, well, I think about everything all the time. And I could say the same thing. And here's what Jody said again. My son, a soldier, can you see tears in my eyes? He is my hero. Jody, God bless you, and please send a tip of the hat from me and everyone here at the Larry Miller Show, and yes, everyone on Milleronia, in fact, to your son, and tell him to work hard and be tough and follow all his orders and to fight well and stay well. And for today, our last one is by Julia Tutko, and here's hers. Fun with poetry, films, hampers, and soap fectas. Here we all connect. Boy, Julia, that's not only lovely, but it's flattering, too. It's, well, about our show here and fun with poetry, films, hampers, and soap fectas. Here we all connect. So thank you, Julia, and thank all of you. Please, folks, write to LarryMillerPodcast.com and send us a haiku from you. And I think this is going to continue to be fun, interesting, and very touching. Jody, that was beautiful about your son, the soldier. And all you folks, keep writing to us and keep writing the haiku. That's good. I'm going to keep saving these, and we'll read more every time we get together here. And that brings us to my favorite part of the show, the joke of the week. Sounds like both of those musicians would write a good haiku, too. Anyone who knows how to boom on a timpani like that. That was great. Boy, the Colonel can do all sorts of things with that big panel of his. That was a heck of a thing. I guess that was a fight between the two groups about who had signed up for the rehearsal room first. That's how they fight. They don't yell at each other, and they don't start punching it out, which is one good way to do it. They just play their themes constantly at each other, angrily. At any rate, this is a joke of the week, and you might find it enlightening. I know I did. Young fella joins a monastery. He goes up over the hills, and he goes through the fields, and he goes into the forest, and he finds it's a monastery that's been there many years, hundreds of years. And he wants to join, and he does. He goes up for his first contact there is with the head brother of the monastery, and then the brother says to him, well, just to explain a few things, you know, the religion, you know all the main things, but I want to tell you something. This is a silent monastery, okay? So you don't speak at all, not you, not anyone. There's not a word, not a mutter, not a whisper, not a whimper, nothing. You say nothing. Every 10 years, then you get to come up to the office here and say two words to me. That's it. Two words. Every 10 years, you get two words. And the guy says, well, okay, that sounds all right to me. He goes downstairs, joins up. 10 years go by, folks. And he goes back up to the monk's office. And the monk says, well, go ahead. Let's hear your two words. And he says, bed hard. And he goes back downstairs. 10 more years go by. 10 more. And he goes up to the monk again and says, food cold. And that's it. He just turns around, walks back downstairs. Another 10 years go by. And now he comes back up to the monk and says, I'm leaving. And the monk says to him, frankly, I'll be honest, I'm not surprised. Since you got here, you've been doing nothing but complaining. Isn't that a good joke, though? Now, I think I asked the Colonel, I think I told that a couple of years ago here on Joke of the Week, but I'll tell you, it came into my head again, and we love the jokes you're sending in, and that is no kidding. I love telling them. Please keep sending them. But that joke came into my head, and I thought, wow, that's a pretty good joke. Let's give that to folks again. And and he thought so too, so there it is. And I hope you liked it again. And that brings us to my third favorite part of the show. The Triple M, MMM, Magic Movie Moment. Still with the greatest piano note in the history of all show business at the end. To close that theme. That's right. And this week, folks, it's very meaningful. And you'll see how it relates to some of the other things we're doing today. The movie is called The Charge of the Light Brigade. And from 1936, from a great poem by Alfred Lord Tennyson, and it's a true story from English history and a great movie. Michael Curtiz directing it, and it's starring Errol Flynn, Olivia de Havilland, Henry Stevenson, Nigel Bruce, David Niven, and, it's about the Crimean Wars there from the middle of the 19th century, and they were very serious war there for England against Russia, and there was great drama, and the Charge of the Light Brigade is a true story, and what happens in it is, well, the characters, Errol Flynn is, well, Errol Flynn, for goodness sake. And he's in love with Olivia de Havilland. But so is his brother, David Niven. And she loves David Niven. And we see along the way as the movie goes that Errol Flynn is angry about this, and David Niven is angry about this, and they get angrier and angrier, and then finally at one point Olivia de Havilland tells Errol Flynn the truth that they, yes, she and his brother love each other, and they are going off to get married, and that's the way it is, and he understands, and he puts on a very gallant, gentlemanly demeanor, and he says, all right then. And he decides to do something very dramatic. This is a war against Surat Khan and his folks there and all the Russians and well, all the horsemen and all the spear throwers from all of Russia and all the riflemen. And what Errol Flynn decides to do with his British command there is he gets a message from headquarters saying, don't fight Surat Khan. Do not engage in anything. Don't engage in anything that upsets him or hurts any of his people. And Errol Flynn rewrites that order himself. He rewrites it to say that he and his command are ordered to charge into the Russian batteries there at Balaclava. And this is all true, by the way. And what they do is they form up and they charge. This is why it's called, the movie is called The Charge of the Light Brigade. And what drama there is. And in fact, there was a poem written about it by Alfred Lord Tennyson. I know I've mentioned this. And this is why, as you may have noticed, I didn't do the poetry corner before the magic movie moment, because these two relate. Everything comes to bear. Everything comes to make sense through this great poem. And here it is. That's going to be the poetry corner this week. Alfred Lord Tennyson's Charge of the Light Brigade. Half a league, half a league, half a league onward. All in the valley of death rode the 600. Forward the light brigade, charge for the guns, he said. Into the valley of death rode the 600. Forward the light brigade, was there a man dismayed? Not though the soldier knew someone had blundered. Theirs not to make reply, theirs not to reason why, theirs but to do and die. Into the valley of death rode the 600. Cannon to the right of them, cannon to left of them, cannon in front of them, volleyed and thundered. Stormed at with shot and shell, boldly they rode and well. Into the jaws of death, into the mouth of hell, rode the 600. Flashed all their sabers bare, flashed as they turned in air, sabering the gunners there, charging an army, while all the world wondered. Plunged in the battery smoke, right through the line they broke, Cossack and Russian, reeled from the saber stroke, shattered and sundered. Then they rode back, but not the 600. Cannon to right of them, cannon to left of them, cannon behind them, volleyed and thundered. Stormed at with shot and shell, while horse and hero fell, that they had fought so well, came through the jaws of death, back from the mouth of hell, all that was left of them, left of 600. When can their glory fade? Oh, the wild charge they made! All the world wondered. Honor the charge they made! Honor the Light Brigade, Noble 600. Well, I think that's a heck of a poem. I hope you agree. This was, well, very big news in England in the 19th century. Remember something, of course, they didn't have TV or radio or any of the things we think of as natural. There was nothing electronic and there was nothing where news would get around. But people knew that, good Lord, this Light Brigade, 600, into the Valley of Death rode the 600. And what made it a magic movie moment for me is the acting is so good, and Errol Flynn on horseback and Nigel Bruce on horseback and all of them charging like that and getting blown apart. And Errol Flynn is shot by his old acquaintance, this Surat Khan, and it's a mortal wound. He's still on horseback, still riding, but he's dying, and he lives just long enough to charge right at Surat Khan and kill him. He lances him. And, well, it's just interesting. I was saying to the colonel before, we don't write poems today about battles. I don't know if we know what any of those mean anymore. And I don't know, especially with these things going on today, I don't know what they mean anymore. But I'll tell you what, I know what this one means, and I'm glad I had a chance to tell you about it through that wonderful poem. And what a guy to write it, Alfred Lord Tennyson. And that was huge in England in those days. That poem, can you imagine? Nothing was ever bigger than that. Half a league, half a league, half a league onward. And by the way, a league was, I asked the colonel and he looked this up. A league was always known as, it signified how far a man could walk in an hour, which is roughly the same then as it is now, roughly 3 miles. So half a league was a mile and a half. And to ride down in formation, ride down that plain at Balaclava, and then as all the troops for the Russians and the Cossacks and Surat Khan's men all lined up in, well, ready to fight back, the depth they had and in the horseshoe, and good Lord, the cannon to the left and the right. Yeah, that's... it's a heck of a ride to make. So in any case, folks, that's the magic movie moment for this week. And that's the poem for this week. And I hope you liked it as much as I do. And it's funny, too, the reason it's funny to think of, that kind of conflict. Because, well, Easter was this week. It was just a few days ago. And, you know, Easter Sunday, and I was thinking, I said to the colonel this morning, whatever happened to the Easter parade? Is there an Easter parade anymore? I mean, where ladies were all dressed up in the fanciest duds they could have, and big hats and umbrellas that matched, and, dresses that were designed or had to be bought in the store for them. It was all kind of rare, but that was a big deal to all Americans, wasn't it? Was this all America? All over America, an Easter parade? Did Mayberry have one? Well, I was thinking back to when in my chorus in elementary school, and this was really just a class. Mrs. Binder was the leader of it. I liked her a lot. And she would have us, we'd sing all sorts of songs, and we sang Easter songs, too. And we sang songs you wouldn't run into a lot today. There were songs, in the songs they would often say, Negro Spiritual, written underneath the title. And songs like Swing Low, Sweet Chariot, and jump down, spin around, which you may remember. It's funny, Colonel Jeff and I were thinking back on that. You know, we would sit down there. We were a nice middle-class suburban area there, and it was a public school, and it was the kind of mood at the time of we still weren't allowed. Kids were not allowed to wear sneakers or jeans or T-shirts to school or open shirts that weren't buttoned. And so we still wore. It was a regular neighborhood with, you know, kids' fathers doing all sorts of jobs and the moms, too. And, well, I loved growing up there, but it's funny to think of 30 or 35 kids in the chorus at 10:30 in the morning in Mrs. Binder's room with a piano there, and these kids wearing corduroys or khakis and button-down shirts tucked in and buttoned. And for shoes, well, there were no sneakers again. We weren't even allowed to wear loafers, and it was regular shoes. It was a lot of Buster Brown shoes. I mean, and these were parents, by the way, well, who couldn't afford to get these clothes handmade. So it was funny, and all these kids, the fun part of it was, we're all standing around singing, jump down, spin around, pick a bale of cotton, jump down, spin around, pick a bale of hay. Now, I didn't know at the time, I didn't know what a bale of hay or cotton was. Jump down, spin around, what did that mean? And then the chorus was, if you remember, Colonel Jeff and I were singing this before, oh, Lordy, pick a bale of cotton, oh, Lordy, pick a bale of hay. But it was spelled in dialect. It was spelled, oh, Lordy, capital L-A-W-D-Y. And that song had some words in it that, well, people don't say anymore. And it contained the, you know, verse 2, 3, 7, you know, they were long songs too. But we never sang those verses, and I liked singing all sorts of those songs. Plus, there were songs. I remember one called Marching to Pretoria, which is, that would be the capital of South Africa, Pretoria. And I, for the first time, just this morning, I said to Colonel Jeff, I never thought about this before, but because I remember the song, we were marching to Pretoria, Pretoria, Pretoria. We were marching to Pretoria, Pretoria, hurrah. And I said to him this morning, I never thought about it before, but why were they marching to Pretoria? Who was marching to Pretoria? And, well, you imagine, it wasn't the most wholesome thing. I guess, you know, maybe a troop of them had marched out of Pretoria, and, well, they did all sorts of things. I mean, didn't all those groups fight and kill each other? And then they, when I guess that was finished, and then they, well, you got to march back to Pretoria. You say, hey, that was, we did pretty well there. Let's go get a good meal and have a few pints of beer in Pretoria. In any case, that was, so that's when we sang Easter songs. And plenty of songs there. In the Easter parade, on the avenue, Fifth Avenue. And I still never knew what it meant as a kid. I'm not sure what it means now. The Easter parade in New York City in 1947 was estimated to draw 1 million people. Now, that's a lot. The Colonel looked this up on, what was it, Wikipedia or something like that? Not that they're always correct, but that one's correct. 1 million people. And by the way, these parades were, it was an informal, unorganized event with or without religious significance. So that those 1 million people just showed up. Where? I don't know. What, all over? Was it all over? It started, see, the thing is, and these parades started, I don't even know if parade is the exact word for it, but they started spontaneously in the 1870s, and even that phrase, started spontaneously, well, so people just started meeting, and the answer is, and then eventually they moved and got organized and moved and started going down Fifth Avenue. And I assume, again, all over America. and all over Canada and all over, that people would just start having parades. And apparently, as it was saying, people would want to show their clothes off to other worshipers. And what they would do is they would walk out of their church after the service, and they'd walk down to another church to see the other flowers and to see what the people were dressed in there. And, well, and when, I guess when enough people marched, that's a parade. On the old Jack Benny show, the people would stroll down Wilshire Boulevard. There was a parade they made in the same way down Wilshire Boulevard. And that was the old Jack Benny show, as Colonel Jeff mentioned, and looked up, that they always had an episode about their Easter parade. Well, this is fine, except Jack Benny was Jewish, which is also fine because Jesus was Jewish. Does any of this relate? Does it mean anything about a parade? Who knows? And you know what? I just wonder, what about the eggs? Why eggs? Why were there eggs? What does Easter egg mean? And it was on the article Jeff was reading, in Tudor times, unless you had new cloth around that time of the year, springtime, around April, around Easter time, unless you had new cloth in your life, for your home, for your family, moths and crickets would eat the old cloth. They'd start eating then, about the same time. So that's how, apparently, new clothes and new fashion became very desirable and commonplace. So there was an actual proverb that on Easter Sunday, unless you had some part of your outfit that was new, then you won't have good luck for the rest of the year. And, well, this was 15th century England, when they also had to worry about being drawn and quartered. So there were things to worry about, probably more important than moths and crickets, but you didn't want those bugs in your clothes. And that apparently eggs are given to celebrate. They gave each other eggs to celebrate Easter or springtime as a symbol of fertility and rebirth. And then the Easter eggs symbolized the empty tomb of Jesus. And they were like the stones taken away. An egg appears to be a stone from a tomb, but then a bird hatches from it, symbolizing life. So it's a reminder that those who believe will experience eternal life. You know, in older days, and Colonel Jeff remembered this, that when he was a kid, people used to give chicks, speaking of eggs, they used to give chicks, little chickens, to kids for Easter, which is kind of cute, a little chick. But see, they were always rooster chicks. They were always rooster chicks, boy chicks, because, well, the girl chicks could eventually grow up and lay eggs, which is what everyone wanted. Remember, this is not today. This is years ago. And he mentioned that his father, Colonel Jeff's father, worked for the phone company. And in those days, in older days, I didn't know this, but he mentioned people used to call and ask operators for advice. This is before the whole question of information, please. That was long before that, but they would call. Remember, there were no computers. There was no advice column. There was nothing. There was nothing where you could get something answered. And people would call the phone operators and say, gee, my kid's got a bunch of baby chicks on Easter, but, well, we don't know what to do with them and don't want to, you know, just keep them around here and keep just growing. And they're all rooster chicks. They're boy chicks. And the operator would always say, well, we have a guy here who will take them. And they meant Jeff's father, because he worked at the phone company too. But they would always say, you know what, bring the chicks by here, because we have a guy here who will take them. And people did. They brought the chicks by. And I just said to him, so your family just kept the roosters? And he said, well, for a while, till dinner. till dinner. What happened then? Well, what do you think? And he said, and you know what? Those were always terrible too. Cooked rooster. He said, yard chickens were always terrible to eat. And I said, but your dad kept killing them and cooking them. And, well, yeah, who passes up a free chicken? And you know what? It makes you think back to times we don't know. My grandmother, God bless her, was a chicken flicker. A flicker. And not for a living, but that's how she would make. She'd get a fresh chicken from the butcher. But fresh in those days meant fresh. I mean fresh. Meaning alive. So, you know, so she's got to take that thing back to their house in Brooklyn and take it out back. And out back, by the way, in those days didn't mean by the swings. There were no swings. So she'd take them out back into the small backyard there and to a slightly darker patch of dirt and flick them, meaning you pick them up by the head, by the neck, and flick it and break their necks. That's how you'd kill the chicken. And then you take them back inside, and the real fun started because, you know, you don't just put them in the oven. You pluck them, chop them to pieces, and clean them. And when they said clean and dress a chicken, they didn't mean give them a bath and put them in a suit. They meant pull out everything that was inside. Then you stuff them, salt them, and put them in the oven. So after that, you know, after that, no kid in those days would ever say, oh, chicken again? Because that was it. That took a lot to get that food. You complain about the chicken, they just might flick you. And what happened to Tommy? Oh, you didn't hear? He got tired of eating chicken, and he said so. Not a smart move. They cleaned and dressed him. And everyone said it was the best chicken ever. And no one ever complained again. My grandmother, God bless her, these were people, by the way. You have this in your family, too. From grandparents, great-grandparents. These were tough folks. My grandmother was born in Latvia, in Eastern Europe. And her husband, my grandfather, was from the old Austria. In those days, you remember, as you know, in those days, a lot of countries don't have the same borders they had today, or didn't even exist. But in those days, my grandfather, who was a plumber, well, he was a well digger back then, and he got married to my grandmother, and he came to America. He came to the United States and started out and set up a place to live and became a plumber. There weren't that many people who needed wells dug in 1912, but he became a plumber. And then after you save up some money, so a year later, you bring your wife out and all sorts of folks who were in your family. And as you know, as you ought to know, that's how a lot of people got here. And my grandmother, I'll never forget, we were over at their house in Brooklyn a lot, a ton. And I just loved them all. I loved her and my grandfather, my Uncle Harry, and my Uncle Arnie, who's still, I spoke to him before. I said, I'll call you back. But he's the last of the Mohicans. They were all interesting, tough, smart people. And my grandmother came back one day, I'll never forget this, and she was kind of coming up the stairs slowly, the back stairs, into the kitchen from the backyard, and she was cut on her forehead. And I said, oh, what's wrong? And she had fallen on the sidewalk and cut her eyebrow and her forehead, and it was bleeding. So we all, well, my mom and dad were there, and everyone, you know, just sat her down and cleaned up her forehead. And she went to the eye doctor. They took her to the eye doctor just to check. And he cleaned her up and sewed her up and made it all better. And then he said to her, well, what kind of glasses do you wear? And she said, well, I don't wear glasses. I don't wear glasses. And he said, oh, really? Oh, let's try a pair on you. Folks, this is the part I just love about this. She was already in her 70s, but he put a pair of glasses on her, and she kind of looked at him and jerked back and looked around. She had never really seen what the world looked like. Can you imagine that? Well, of course you can, but think about that. In childhood, and in those days, well, she and her sisters worked in a box factory when they were 8 years old, and they'd all go to school till about second grade, and then they'd save money because they all needed dough in those days, but they save also so that the oldest brother could go to a local high school. And then she, you know, came at my grandfather. All these things she did in her life, had five kids, came to America, lived in Brooklyn, and was brilliant. I just loved her. But she had never really seen anything. She never wore glasses, and no one ever said, "Would you like some glasses?" She got glasses that day. Can you imagine? She'd never seen her children. They were all, well, a very nearsighted family. God bless them. And my Uncle Harry, in fact, there's a great story I'll tell you another time about, well, in World War II, he has some great war stories, both from Europe and from the Pacific. And he was always a handsome, tough guy, but he had some glasses that looked like, well, these are glasses. And came from my grandmother's side. But can you imagine that? Not till she was 74 had she ever put on a pair of glasses and looked around at everyone she loved and seen them for the first time. Well, I think of that sometimes very fondly because, good Lord, I love her still. She's passed on some time now. But can you imagine going through all that in life and never really seeing what it looks like? Well, she knows now. And like you and me, we know the same things. You and I do. That Homer is Homer, Pluto is a planet. And remember, as always, if you walked out of bed today and had a job to go to, and a home to come back to, and someone there who cares about you, folks, the game's over and you've won. So you know what? Always remember that and get glasses if you need them. We'll see you here next time, and thanks.